Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome back to AnCast. It has been a while, but we've been busy. Hope's here.
Hi.
And we are back and alive. Sort of alive. I would say definitely alive. Awake is that's in question. That's got a question mark after it.
In a mostly functional state.
Yeah. And that voice you're hearing, it was our. Well, we just came back from Japan, for people who don't know listening to this. We were there for 10 days, and we were on a tour with PackSet Tours. And he's actually been on the show to talk about this before. My old friend, former ANN employee, and now the director, owner, operator, tour guide for PackSet Tours, Evan Liu is here. Evan, thanks for coming on and chatting with us.
Thanks for having me, and yes, welcome to cat ownership, Zach.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got a cat recently, so if you hear thunking, and he's a Siamese mix, so if you hear thunking and meowing, that's the cat.
Mm-hmm. consider it an ambiance.
It's yeah.
A yeah.
Cool part of the experience.
Background. Yeah, right. So third host for So we just got back a few days ago, and we literally just, as we're taping this, just finished uploading the last of our gigantic photo tour updates. This most recent one had 146 images in it from Kyoto and the Tezuka Museum, which were the last couple days of scheduled activities on the tour. And that's half as many photos as we took of Anime Japan, which went up about a week ago, about a week and a half ago. That was 300 photos. That's still there. Go check it out. This is all kind of an experience. So, I'd been to Japan twice before. Longtime listeners will know about that. And Hope has never been. Mm. And we had an opportunity to go on one of your tours, the Animated Spring Tour. And we kind of wanted to do a little bit of a postmortem. But before we get started on that, we've had you on the show before to talk about running a tour guide company. And yep. It's been a couple of years since...
It's been three, I think.
3 years?
Yeah, 3 years.
How time flies. So it's been three years.
I feel old.
Yeah. Wow, no shit. Your tour made me feel fucking ancient.
I'm sorry about that. I do apologize.
So let's start by talking about those 3 years. I mean, the company is doing very well from what I understand now. And, you know, you guys had like a little bit of a shaky takeoff. But from what I understand, you guys are doing really well now.
Yeah, we're doing pretty well. Well, we had a shaky takeoff in that we launched about 9 months after the Great East Japan earthquake and disaster. And it was still kind of hey, I really hope this isn't a crazy idea that results in us living in cardboard boxes. 'Cause that would be pretty crappy. So, yeah, we launched after that, and our first tour was Animated Spring 2012, and it was just after – I don't know how to take this. You know, I used to work for Pop Japan Travel, and I'm not going to dance around that. I'm just going to come out and say it, because pretty much everyone who used to work for Pop Japan Travel ended up working in travel for another company later on. So when we started PackSet, it was just like there was that lingering voice in the back of my head like, oh, I'm doing the same shit that everyone else did, you know. So nervous about that. But when we got started and people really liked our itineraries and what we were trying to do, how we were trying to kind of change the way that our tours run, it was a really positive response. And then, you know, word of mouth spread. And by 2013, we were doing, you know, pretty brisk business, pretty busy.
To wit, when you started PackSet, all those other companies were in the process of dying.
Yeah.
And now, from what I understand, you're kind of the only game in town for this sort of thing anymore?
Kind of. I mean, other tour companies run like anime focused tours. There's a couple operators that do like a, hey, we'll show you where Akihabara is and you're on your own from there. And then there's a couple other places. What we try to do is we try to do kind of like a, hey, here's the pop culture you've heard about. Here's some other parts of Japan we think are cool, so that by the end of the trip, everyone kind of feels like they can have their own take on the Japan experience instead of, you know, like, oh, here is how Japan is. That's kind of our goal with the tour. So,
right. And so what are some of the sort of biggest challenges that you sort of had to overcome in the last like couple of years? You know, just in terms of financially, in terms of what the tours actually want, in terms of tailoring those tours and figuring out, okay, here's exactly what these people want. If we do this, we'll fill up a tour really fast.
Well, the biggest thing, and it's the biggest thing when you're marketing to anime fans and fans of Japanese pop culture, is that, you know, showing up and being like, hey, here we have this awesome tour project, now give me 3,000 of your hard-earned dollars.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. And so we kind of knew from the outset that it was going to be kind of a slow burn, you know, a year of letting people know, you know, hi, here we are. We're Paxset. We exist. We're cool. Please remember us when you're ready to spend a lot of money on a trip to Japan that will hopefully be awesome. And yeah, it's just the first couple people that were able to come with us on tours, in particular, a couple of returning guests from my PJT days. Imari from American Cosplay Paradise was on a tour. She spread the word about us, and it was just really kind of this organic word of mouth thing. So then people came up to us and said, you know, hey, it would be really cool if you did a tour based on this, and we take those ideas and, you know, ran with what we could. When we started the company, one of the things we did very intentionally was we decided that we were going to, you know, try to do as much stuff as possible in-house, from negotiating with hotels, hotel contracts, and destinations, everything from maid cafes on up. And that gives us a, you know, while that creates a lot of headaches and means that I have to stay up until 5 a.m. Skyping with Japan sometimes, mm-hmm. and, which is a really unpleasant experience, mm-hmm. It means that, you know, whenever someone was like, hey, here's this wacky idea, you should try it, it actually means that we have the flexibility to put it up and see who's interested in it. So, and that's been really helpful for us.
Yeah, and your focus early on was like, well, you know, the usual nerd tour, like, hey, here's where the anime stuff is. And that was the tour that we were on, which was, here's where the anime stuff is. But you've got, like, I was looking at the site, and I think your next one is cute animal-focused.
Yeah. So, you actually know the person who helped come up with that idea. We were having dinner with Bamboo. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you know what you should do? You should do a dog petting tour. And I was like, how the fuck would I do that? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, hey, here we are in Japan. Here's some poodles, pet them. But there's so many animal-centric places in Japan in sort of off-the-beaten-path locations in sort of rural areas. And we love going to those places because I feel like if you're going to make the trip to Japan, having the chance to experience life outside Tokyo is really essential, because, I mean, it's like a Japanese tourist coming to America and only going to, you know, New York. They've only experienced the city. You know, same token, like if a Japanese person were to come to America and just spend time in like mid-state Kansas, God forbid. Apologies to anyone from Kansas. they'd have a really different experience and might not think it's as cool. So we try mixing it up, and we found a bunch of these destinations. There's an island inhabited by bunnies called Okunoshima. Mm-hmm. There's a cat island that was unfortunately damaged in the tsunami, but has recovered pretty nicely, called Tashirojima. And we put those on an itinerary and added to it a bunch of cities that were in between that had some stuff that was notable, and put it up on the site. And a lot of people asked a lot of questions about it, and it got a lot of interest. And yeah, we ended up getting about, I think we're going to go with 14 people. That's next month. Yeah.
Wow. So that's interesting, because it seems like you could just follow the trends of what gets coverage from Japan in, like, nerd, I don't want to necessarily say nerd, but even just, like, general news blogs and, like, places where they do just sort of, like, fun kill time kind of news. Because those Cat and Bunny Islands were all over those kinds of places, in the news recently. And it seems like, you know, you'll get enough people curious enough about it to want to see it for themselves. But they're like, I would never even, they wouldn't even know where to start. Like, going where they, once they got to, you know, Narita Airport, then what? You know, like, what now? How do I get to the Bunny Island, you know? So it seems like that would be, like, a pretty good strategy, just in terms of, like, figuring out tours that aren't, here's where the anime stuff is.
Yeah. Where to start. And the thing that I keep telling people that ask me about this thing is that the whole anime tour thing, I think there's this kind of misconception that I go to the airport and there are 30 like identical looking anime fans holding the same kind of merchandise in their arms, waiting to be taken to the holy land of Akihabara, where the gods of Moe will descend upon them and go, "Pwang, here's a bunch of anime shit and you will like it." You know,
yeah.
Anime fans aren't like that. I don't think it's a easily pigeonhole. You know, I don't think it's a demographic you can pigeonhole. All of our anime tours, it's just been, I mean, the tour that you were on included, it's been a kind of a reaffirmation of how diverse anime fans are. I mean, on our tour, there were people that were really interested in just buying a lot of stuff. And there were people that were, you know, it's kind of like they wanted to see the places that, you know, were, you know, inspired the anime. One person said, after the tour, it's just like, it felt like I was on an anime because I was, you know, at these places that you usually see in the backgrounds of anime, but you don't get to experience it. And other people, you know, they were brought by friends and they came to Japan and they weren't sure what they'd find interesting. And at the end, they said things like, you know, "Oh, the onsen was great. Mount Nokogiri was awesome. We enjoyed the picnic," stuff like that. So I mean, it's really a difficult demographic to nail down. Not everyone's interested in the same sort of thing. And, you know, even though people say they want to go on an anime tour, most of the stuff that we got really positive comments on in the feedback surveys was the stuff where it's just like, "Man, I'm really glad I went to this place that I didn't know existed." You know, places like Mount Nokogiri and the Nijo Castle light up on the last night in Kyoto.
Right.
I didn't know that existed, but I thought it was really cool. So
yeah, well, I think, you know, if you've been an anime fan for long enough, something about Akiba is sort of familiar.
Yeah, it does.
It doesn't necessarily feel like a foreign place if you've been an anime fan long enough. I mean, Hope, what did you think? You'd never been before.
When I got to Japan, I mean, I was at least at first concerned that it would be really different. Honestly, it was pretty familiar, not just for the anime stuff, although that certainly was a factor in a couple locations where it's like, "Oh, this is like a shrine that I've seen," and this sort of thing. And, I know when I put this down in the photo blogs thing, but, when we went to the Meiji Jingu Shrine, I remember thinking, "Oh, this is really austere and really well taken care of, and kind of, it's special. Like, this isn't like a lot of the shrines you see in anime. This is not one of those that has, like, a bunch of little buildings and big, loud ringing bells." And then when we went to the Inari Shrine many, many days later, it's like, there were the bells, and there were the really big red torii gates, and I'm like, "Oh, this is the kind of stuff that they put in that," you know. And that this other thing existed that's not as forefront in fantasy cartoons is interesting. And it was nice to see it. And the city itself was like, this isn't really an anime thing, but the city itself was just like, "Oh, this is, you know, this is like a normal big city. It's not the same as New York or Chicago or LA, but it has little things in common with all those places. And, you know, these are just sort of people going about their business." And there was, you know, there was enough that was familiar to make the new stuff, the unique stuff, all the more special. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. But, I mean, specifically Akihabara. Like,
oh, yeah. Well, Akihabara, yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, I recognize certain, like, brands, they'll, like, twist the names of stores that they go into and stuff like Welcome to the NHK or Genshin or, you know, wherever else you see people in Akihabara. But, I mean, I'm just familiar with how those stores are laid out, that they just build up, and it's floors and floors of, like, oh, this is doujinshi, and this is, you know. I guess that stuff was familiar. I feel like it would have been pretty self-explanatory, even if it hadn't showed up in the cartoons and the anime and stuff like that, because it's, it's a department store, so, you know.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing that we noticed, or especially the thing that I noticed, was just how much Fujoshi stuff has taken over there.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. And then I saw it, and I was like, I'm so happy. I was not expecting that at all. And it's like, oh, two of these shows that I really like. They're not personal favorites, per se, but they're good, guilty pleasure, goofy, high-quality sort of goof-off shows. They had a ton of merchandise there, and it was fun seeing all that stuff, because you don't see it like at cons and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, you've been going every year for years. When did you start noticing that creep?
That creep is, it's really been, like, with the advent of Free, and I think Hitalia a little bit, too. Back when I was, working at ANN, I think the biggest divide that you could see in anime fandom was, like, you'd go to places like Akihabara, and it's all stuff for dudes. You'd go to Otome Road, it's all stuff for girls. And then if you went to a doujinshi sales event like Haru Comic City or Comiket, you'd go based on the day that you went, it would be either all girls or all guys. It felt like everything was kind of in separate camps. And now it feels like the two are moving a little closer. And that's a kind of a cool thing to witness. Yeah. It's also cool to see like a little bit of that space for like Fujoshi and fangirls appear in Akihabara. And
it wasn't a little.
It's nice to see there, especially because, Melon Books and the upper floors of Torano Ana are still like nothing but gross, like crazy stuff and, X cup size breasts and stuff like that sort of thing.
Well, with a name like Melon Books.
So.
Well, it surely that's, I'm not saying that stuff doesn't exist anymore or that it's necessary to stamp it out. It's just neat that now that same building has three floors of stuff for dudes and three floors of stuff for the ladies.
Yeah, Torano Ana's second building has become, they've worked pretty good on adding much more stuff and making that more of a Fujoshi-centric building. So it's great. It's been like just the last 2-3 years, but hopefully the trend will continue. And I mean, if the fan interest around like, Free and similar series like that keep pace, I think it's gonna keep going.
Yeah, the place I most noticed where it seemed like both genders had actually kind of converged was the stands. The occasional, they weren't as prominent as probably that they would have been like several months prior to when we visited, but there were still stands like just full of Fate Zero merchandise, and they had like statuettes.
they had
statuettes posed specifically, so to speak, of Saber and Iris Veil, obviously for the guys, that were really elaborate and fancy or whatever. And then there were like a couple cheesecake pictures of those characters, but also but right beneath that on the same shelf, they had, these like, I wouldn't call them bookmarks. They were kind of like big, heavy bookmarks with the little holographic things on them and, laid out for all the characters. And they were completely sold out of, what's his butt? I can't remember. Oh, Tosaka. They were completely sold out of Tosaka, Kaneth, Ryder, and Kira Kotomine, and those are all the big fangirl characters. Everybody else was still there, even all the girls and everything, but all those guys were suspiciously sold out, and, it was interesting, like, looking on both sides of that stand and going, oh, well, here's the stuff for the guys, here's the stuff for the girls, like, that the show is popular with everybody.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the big thing we noticed in Akihabara. Moving along on the tour, like, it seemed like most of the tour was centered around shopping and dining. And I mentioned this, like, just before we left the airport, like, that seemed to be sort of a common comment among the tour goers was, man, there's a lot of shopping on this tour. And you said something to the effect of like, well, no matter how much shopping I include, some people complain it's not enough, and some people complain that it's too much.
Yeah.
And we so, get that, yeah, where do you even begin to find a balance?
Finding a balance is difficult. We try to strike it per tour, and that's why we included the full day, free day, because we found that in previous years, like, if we didn't have enough free time, like, we had mostly free time in the evenings on the previous tours, and but a lot of shops would close and temples would close, so people wouldn't be able to go to either one. So we kind of put more things in the evening and added the complete free day where nothing was scheduled whatsoever. And that was a day that, yeah, literally half our group decided to go do something cultural while the other half went to places to shop. And the surveys, which we finally got back the results from about, yeah, it was just yesterday. We saw that balance pop up in a lot of places. Half the surveys said that they had just enough time to shop. And then about 25% said there was not enough, and 25% said there was too much. So I want to think that we're kind of striking a balance. It's even a lot for me, but when you're talking about a tour where you do get a lot of like anime fans and collectors, they do like to go to those areas. And I think the thing that we try to do to strike a balance is when we go to a place like Harajuku, we make sure that we include places like Meiji Jingu. And when we're in a place like Namba, we make sure that we point out that the shop isn't all like anime focused as much as possible. So interestingly, and I'm sorry if I'm carrying things too much over into Anime Japan here, but half of our surveys, it was really split right down the middle. Half of our surveys said I wanted to leave Anime Japan sooner, and about 30% said I could have stayed at Anime Japan all day, and the remaining 20% didn't say anything. So it's like half, it was that always strike that really struck me as interesting, because yeah, it's just like if you were a hardcore collector, you wanted to get everything at the show, you know, one full day was not enough. But if you were someone that, you know, you just walked around the booths and then you were like, oh, okay, I've seen what's here, I'm done. You know, I think we were there for about 3.5-4 hours before most of the group went to the onsen. Yeah, that was more than enough. So, and every year, I mean, that's why we tell everyone, like, please fill out surveys. Please tell us what you liked. Please tell us what you don't like. So we can rejigger those balances every single year. Because last year, after we all went to Ace, all of the surveys said we were at Ace for 3 hours, and that was 2 hours too long. So I don't know if that was more of a reflection on Ace, though, because Anime Japan was a lot busier.
Yeah, I wouldn't know how to judge that myself. I mean, obviously, our mission at Anime Japan was dramatically different from the people that you took. We were there at 8 o'clock in the morning before they were letting anyone except press in. And we got out of there as soon as possible, mostly because I wanted to be able to take pictures without being in the middle of crowds. So, you know, my experience, the craziest thing I saw at Anime Japan were they had early bird tickets where they let people in at like 9 or something like that, 9:30. And you just saw kid like just fucking sprinting for the Love Live booth. Literally running as fast as they could.
Gotta get all 9 character cards.
And then you would see them, they would take handfuls of the clear files and whatever it was they were giving out. These guys would take big piles of them away. And then you'd see them splitting them up. You'd see them sitting on benches splitting up their swag. But that was what the people, at least seems like that's what most of the fans were there to see, was the Love Live stuff, because that's like the big hotness right now.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, if I were just an American fan attending for the first time, I feel like you can see everything they had to offer in about 2 hours.
Pretty much.
About 2 hours. And that's taking your time. That's going through the booths. That's seeing everything. I was able to photograph the entire show in 2 hours. And we were moving pretty quick, obviously, because I was trying to beat the buzzer get out of there before the crowd showed up. But I feel like we saw the whole thing, and unless we were standing in lines to buy merchandise, that was more than enough. And I feel like I soaked it all in and saw everything there was to see. I guess I could see where like super hardcore fan just really wanted to just spend as much time there as possible. But I can't see how anyone would need 2 days for Anime Japan. That would baffle me.
And we still tell people, like, you know, it's a trade show. It's not like an American con, you know, and some people still have that misconception. But, you know, no one on our group this year, but we've had to tell people that at, like, our booth at Anime Expo, like, hey, if you come to Anime Japan, it's not like that. It's a trade show, basically. It's like a bunch of people mentioned on the tour. It's just like, yeah, this feels more like E3. And I think that's more an apt comparison. So
it's more... Okay, so the big difference between Anime Japan and, like, TAF is that, the stated mission statement by the guys who are running it now is, we're going to bring the fans and business together. And, okay, whether or not yep. that's a good idea remains to be seen. But what that basically meant was that it's a lot more like the San Diego Comic-Con exhibit hall now, where it's the giant displays, and they're giving away free stuff, and they have a store. And it's entirely fan-centric. They're there to sell stuff. And it's the business part of it is mostly kind of gone. Mm-hmm. They have areas cordoned off for business, but I don't know a lot of people. The people that I spoke to were like, I don't want to do business with 50,000 fans in the same building. Like, it's not conducive to business.
Right.
And the big areas that they used to have cordoned off for business are now used for concerts and VA appearances and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So it is a lot more like the San Diego specifically the San Diego Comic-Con exhibit hall minus the panels. So like that's what I would compare it to. Like, have you ever been to Comic-Con? Okay.
Yeah.
You go on the exhibit floor, Anime Japan's kind of like that, except there's no panels.
Yeah. It did feel like that, like all the people running in for like, you know, there were the people just there to see the booths. And then there were the people that were running in to grab as much like limited edition swag and standing in like long online queues for limited edition swag yeah. that some of them would keep and some of them would probably sell online later on. Yeah. Like
convention,
you know,
exclusives. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what people do at San Diego.
Yeah. It did feel, you're absolutely right. It did feel exactly like SDCC in that way, I thought.
Yeah. What did you think of Anime Japan, Hope?
I thought it was really neat. I mean, it helped that last year I watched at least pieces of pretty much everything that came out. And so, in the past I haven't always been that up on what's super recent, but I was really keeping tabs on everything that was recent last year and I think the year prior, so I was walking around the show and it's like, okay, I know what that's from, and that person produced that, that's interesting, because I don't always remember these details. I remember usually Animation Studio and that's about it, but, like, you know, you're reminded of just how much of a, like, monopoly some production companies have on, anime product. Like, Aniplex owns like 60% of, you know, stuff that's put out, it seems like. And it was a lot of fun wandering around looking at everything and looking at the very big impressive stands, seeing which ones were like not so big and impressive. And I mean, it was the only place where I saw stuff for Space Dandy, so that was nice. They had a big life-size QT robot with bendy arms, and I took a short video of it. It's still on my phone, I think. You reach out and shake the hand, and the bendy arm would, like, tube around. And I was like, it's so cute, you know. So, I mean, like, I couldn't have spent all day there or anything, but it was a lot of fun looking around. They had the room that was the most packed while we were there was a standee at the Bandai booth that had all 9 of the Love Live girls, like, costumes recreated. And everybody was packed in there and just, like, obsessing over that, so... That was funny. And that was before they were letting people in, so that was just press and the early birds just packed into that room, like, googling the costumes, which were admittedly, like, they didn't look like cheap cosplay or anything. They were admittedly really nice costumes, but...
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was a lot of fun. The Good Smile booth was really neat. There were, like, in-progress, unfinished figures being developed for Kill la Kill and Attack on Titan, both shows that I really like, so that was cool. I don't know, the whole thing was really neat to see, but I don't think I could have spent much longer there either, so, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting to see, like, the balance, because if you have a tour, like you said, the diversity among anime fans, as easy as it is to sort of generalize them, the diversity among them makes tailoring a tour that makes everyone 100% happy is impossible. Like, you can't do it.
Well, that's why we try to make it as flexible as possible. So, yeah. Oh, did you guys see that, like, girlfriends and boyfriends game simulation booth?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I spent half my time, because just taking photos with all of those cutouts was, like, that was really way too much fun. So.
Yeah.
Although I still think that boyfriend in the middle looked way too much like a Mecha Pilot. Then it's like, he just like had a weird shirt. It's like, dude, you don't look like a guy from a dating sim. Whatever. But.
So after that was the part of the tour I was most excited about, because I finally got to see something that wasn't Tokyo.
Thank God.
you took us on a bullet train down to Osaka. It wasn't as different as I thought it would be. Mostly it was just like people were kind of rude, and other than that, it kind of it looked like Tokyo. It looked like sort of a less it looked a little like a dingier Tokyo. I don't know if that's fair. It seemed a little dingier to me. Go ahead.
It really is like, and I tell everyone about this. It's like, I tell everyone something similar to this. It's like, Osaka is really a unapologetic city. You know, it's a bastion of Japanese humor. Most Japanese comedians are from there. It's, you know, their food is greasy. Everyone, it's a very big, you know, shop hard, eat a lot. Laugh to your heart's content, and don't let anyone, you know, force you to apologize for who you are. So it's kind of more of an off the cuff, honest feeling city. And I kind of dig that vibe compared to Tokyo, because Tokyo can feel kind of uppity at times, like way too fashionable to be cool. So
yeah, all I know is the minute we got back to Tokyo, people started actually respecting my personal space,
like, yeah,
moving out of the way and apologizing if they bumped into me and shit. Like, and I like that. I'll take the politeness over the live, love, large, or whatever the fuck it is the Osaka mantra is. I didn't dislike Osaka. I thought it was a neat and interesting experience, but I'll take snooty if it means I'm not getting smashed into constantly by people who don't seem to give a fuck. Like, I kept getting run into, and it was really annoying. The food was great.
Yeah, okonomiyaki, man.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
I didn't even know the name of it. What was the name of that custard thing that I had that was like?
Oh, the Shulin is a chain of like cream puff places. If you guys have ever heard of Beard Papa, they have a couple locations in the States.
Yeah,
it's like that, but they have a version of the cream puff where it's like got a cookie crumble on the outside, and they put inside hot custard. And you can have it just regular custard. You can have it with caramel on top, or you can have it with chocolate chips. And the chocolate chips one is just like hot, wonderful Jesus. It's so good. It's probably the most unhealthy thing in the universe. But, it's amazing. Love it.
It was obscenely... I was like, this is a sin. Continue to eat.
It's so rich. Yeah.
But, so that was interesting. And I was I remember being taken aback just at the fact that you were able to do this as a job when you take, like, you know, 35-some foreigners into the heart of that gigantic, like, several miles long shopping district in Osaka that's just this sort of crowded labyrinth of stores.
Yeah.
And just said, well, we're going to kill time here for 4 hours, meet you back here.
Yeah.
I would have just been terrified. I would have lost someone.
Don't get lost. You have to live here.
Yeah.
Rules of land.
Yeah. Well, Shinsaibashi Shopping Arcade, it's just like, it is a big crowded mess. And every time I go there, I do get a little worried. But I think it kind of speaks to what the heart of Osaka is. It's just kind of like, it's... everything is kind of connected. It's, you know, in Tokyo, you've got Akihabara in this one area, and then you've got, you know, across town, that's where Shinjuku is, and then Shibuya and Harajuku are south of there. In Osaka, everything really kind of revolves around the Shinsaibashi Tsuji shopping arcade, that one large arcade. It's not like that's where everything cool in Osaka is, but you can find practically everything. There's huge versions of every department store. There's game centers. There's a million places to just absolutely kill your liver in the after hours. Most places are open till 5 a.m. There's nightclubs over in the Americamura section. On the south side, you've got Denden Town, which is where all the otaku stuff is, and the, you know, the trading card stores. I still don't know why Kansai people are so obsessed with trading cards. I'm assuming that, like, in the back of some shop somewhere, that's actually where, like, some of the Mt. Gox servers are hidden or something. I don't know. It's just like...
yeah. Well, it was definitely an interesting experience to see Osaka. I think I do prefer Tokyo. I guess I'll just take that impersonal aloofness.
Yeah,
I liked Osaka more than Tokyo.
Yeah, right.
I did. I was like, this. It's just sort of like this. It just felt like this sort of like weird, obviously planned, grid-like, built down and built up, but in one tidy space, kind of like hive of humanity. I liked it.
It definitely feels more real. It feels more like a real place.
Yeah, the weird. I think the best quote I've ever heard from a participant, from someone who was on our, I think it was Anime Detour 2012. They came up to me and they said, "It's like, you know what? When I pictured Japan as like how I saw it in anime, this actually feels like that. Tokyo didn't feel like that, but this feels like that. Just all the neon and the constant activity and the, you know, drunk people over here and the fashionistas over here, that sort of thing." So,
would you say that? I mean, would you say it's universal and there's not really any difference, or would you say that certain areas of Japan are more westernized than others, and that's part of it? I don't know.
Well, certainly in the cities, if you're talking historically, the places that feel the most westernized, kind of by design, are places like Kobe and Yokohama. Those places have history as shipping towns, some of the first ports that were open to trade with foreign countries after Perry and his black ships showed up in the 1850s. And a lot of those seaside towns, they market it as like hey, this is a place where Western culture entered Japan. You can find like huge Western looking malls there. And, you know, in Yokohama, there's a old brick warehouse that used to be a customs house, and they've converted it into what is probably one of the most fashion forward expensive malls in all of the Kanto area. It's called the Akarenga Kaikan. It's kind of an experience to see because it's a piece of history, and then you go inside and it's just like, oh, it's a mall with a Lush. Okay. So yeah. it really depends on what kind of aspects of Western culture you identify as Western. If you're thinking of like a crowded city, then Tokyo and Osaka definitely fit the bill. But if you're talking about like Western culture, as in like Western stores, Western brands, places like Zach's favorite destination, Odaiba, Yokohama, Kobe, definitely cities like that, where it's definitely got more of a Western feel by design. It's a different feeling. But if you go out in the country, that's where it definitely feels different. Even the cities feel a little different. It's designed differently. So.
Right. Just before the tour wrapped up, we had a full day in Kyoto, which I'd also never been to. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, my experience in Kyoto was not what I was expecting at all until the end of the day. Mm-hmm. The first two places we went were one of which was the Inari Shrine,
Fushimi
Inari Shrine, and then the next was Kiyomizu Temple. These are sort of huge touristy places. And at both of them, I felt like I was in a, especially Kiyomizu Temple, felt like a tourist trap. I understand the place is of great significance and is famous for being what it is. but I could not shake the feeling that I was that it was a tourist trap. And I don't know if that's just my perception based on the giant commerce section that's sort of in front of it. But even the temple itself was so chock-a-block with tourists, and even, you know, even the natives there were, you know, it didn't seem like there was a lot of silent reverence going on. It was a lot of laughing and seemed like kind of maybe joking around, some arguing, and I don't know if that was just
the people kind of there. I think it's kind of a byproduct of the fact that, you know, Kiyomizu is widely known as like the best view of the city of Kyoto, and to be honest, like the view from that temple, it really is the best view you can get of the city. We had a crappy view because it was raining, you know.
So, well, the fog was really nice. Like the fog was made for some great photos.
Yeah, it looked really kind of mysterious. But Kiyomizu, I mean, that's always been a huge like stop. There's tourist buses there all the time. You've always got at least one Chinese tour bus with people from like mainland China. You've got people from Taiwan. You've got people like usually a bus or a tiny bus full of people from Thailand buying goods. And I never really faulted the shrine for it, because the shrine could easily turn around and like, oh, we're going to charge 2,000 yen for admission. Like, you know, places like in California, Hearst Castle charges that much. And it's just like, man, that's really expensive to just see a house. Yeah. But Kiyomizu has never charged, like none of the temples you can go to in Kyoto, none of them charge more than like $3 or $4 to get in. And it's pretty clear that they put it all towards maintenance. And the temple still functions as an actual temple. You know, monks still work there. There's still people selling charms there, stuff like that. I think it's just, you know, that's the place where in Japan, it's just like everyone knows, oh, that's where you have to go. You know, so I guess similar to like, you know, Mount Rushmore, places like that. So every time we're in Kiyomizu, there's like a endless number of stories about our tours going to Kiyomizu Temple, and we're stopped by at least 3 different busloads of school kids who are from other places in Japan who want to interview us in English and talk to us about our experiences. So, yeah, it's kind of unavoidable.
Yeah, okay. I think I understand better now, because, like, you know, you go to Mount Rushmore, you go to If it's that significant a tourist destination, then all of that makes sense. I think it's just combining that with a religious experience. There's a juxtaposition there that for whatever reason just didn't sit right with me. Where it's like either this is a place of holy pilgrimage or a legitimate spiritual place that people come for worship or prayer, or it's a big fuck off tourist trap, like something like a Mount Rushmore, where you've got the, you know, complete with the same total bullshit merchandise, quote unquote, souvenirs. My favorite, of course, being the little plastic ninja in a box with a background of like Mount Fuji that said Heart of Japan on it, or like the soul of Japan or something like that. And I was like, you know, that and like the, you know, plastic nunchucks and samurai swords and, you know, you can buy a crappy yukata and some ninja stars, and I'm in Japan, you know, like it just, oh, it felt so tourist trappy. But the way you explain it, that makes sense. But then again, the Japanese attitude towards religion
is very different. Yeah,
is so different that, you know, something like that could be like a Mount Rushmore.
And it's not a polytheistic culture. And it's common, like, you know, when I worked at the Japan National Tourism Organization, there's a lot of people that when they hear about Kyoto, they do expect it to be this very reverent religious city. But the reality is that it has and still is and has always been a city of 1 million people. And at some point, those two have to coexist. So it's kind of like when, you know, occasionally you'll hear like scholars or students, they come to Kyoto and they're like, oh man, the locals are ruining it by adding a mall to this place over here. And I'm like, well, there was no temple there. They didn't tear down a temple to make that mall. And two, they live here and they can kind of do what they want. It's not like they are obligated to maintain their city a certain way to please these tourists who are only going to show up once in their lives. So I don't know. I think the truth is somewhere in between. That, you know, there's definitely people that go there for a bunch of different reasons. And for the temple, I just thank them that they haven't, you know, jacked up the price when they probably could, and that they just kind of are content to let everything coexist. And they don't let people sell souvenirs or something on the grounds. All that stuff is out front. And of course, the stuff out front is just, it's really pandery. Like, there's a shop that opens in the summer there. I don't know if you guys saw it, but there's like a shop on Kiyomizu Hill that sells nothing but like goods for Johnny's bands and like boy bands to attract the girls that are on the high school tours. Did you guys see that shop?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's like the worst on that hill. Like, every time I see that, I'm like, okay, that depresses me a little, because like that has nothing to do with Kyoto or the shrine or anything. It's just trying to drive up sales. So
like One Direction. Sure you do.
Yeah. One Direction.
Actually, I discovered Japan really likes One Direction.
Oh, God,
I'm not surprised. Like, boy bands have come in and out of fashion in America, but in the UK, not all of Europe, but just the UK and maybe Sweden and definitely Japan, they never went away. People never got tired of them. So it's like the UK has a boy band, Japan wants it. You know, it's like, yeah, not surprised.
Yeah.
So, I mean, overall, like, I shared my thoughts on the tour overall, because part of the, you know, a big part of the reason that we went and that Hope came with is to get two perspectives on the tour, mine being from a place where I've been before, and I've seen this stuff before, at least in Tokyo, and there was a component that I hadn't seen before, but from the perspective of somebody who doesn't necessarily need a guide for Tokyo, at least not to the stuff that you were showing us. You know, and I shared my thoughts in the last photo blog, but effectively, like, you know, from my perspective, I thought that the tour is a perfect experience for someone who's never been and has no idea where to go and doesn't speak Japanese and can't really figure it out on their own. It's kind of perfect for that person. The other stipulation being that also a person who has a shit ton of boundless energy and doesn't expect to do any relaxing on a vacation. you guys ran those folks ragged. 12 to 13 hour days every day that there were tour activities. There's only 2 days without tour activities. And for 10 days. So you're going for a week doing 12 to 13 hour days, and you're expected to be in the lobby at 8 in the morning most days, sometimes earlier, and if you're like a couple minutes late because of the size of the tour, you had to leave folks behind.
That did happen.
And that happened a couple of times. Well, it happened once memorably.
Goodbye, and you get to stay at the Buddhist temple.
Yeah. But for my money, like, on a vacation, I wanted more time for relaxing built in. Like, I don't expect a tour to run from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. or 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. You know, that's longer than a work day, and I'm supposed to be on vacation. Like, it felt like a shit ton, but I understood what you were going for. It's just, I'm just speaking to the people who might look at it and say, like, well, I want a little bit more relax. I want time to hang out. You know, I want time to chill and regain my, you know, get refreshed and stuff like that. That was my only real, like, takeaway from it. That was less than 100% positive. So the other thing that kind of bugged me was the fact that, you know, we had a few outdoor days. On both of those days, it was pouring ass rain outside. And I was curious. I kind of knew why the Kyoto day wasn't rescheduled, because you had booked a private bus for us to get around on, which was great, by the way. But it was pouring as rain. The first time we had a big outdoor activity, which was several hours long, it was miserable outside. Like, totally miserable. And, you know, pouring rain, freezing wind, blasting cold. And I was just wondering, like, why not? If not, rescheduling it, at least get telling people outright, hey, it's miserable out here. If you just want to hang out in the coffee shop, it's right there. Or meet us across the street at this time. Get inside if you want to get inside. And then the people who can go in or want to go in and deal with the fucking elements don't feel like, you know, they can do that. And then the people who don't want to fucking deal with the weather won't feel like they're somehow being like spoil sports or whatever.
No, we've done that many times before. It was just the one morning that we had to go, that we went to Meiji Jingu.
Right.
And yeah, it was that was a tough one to reschedule too, because in Harajuku, all the shopping does open at 10:30, which is why we scheduled that way. So, you know, you can do the shrine is open, so and people can do the shopping. We tell people in the pre-departure emails, like, you know, remember that during the free time during the shopping to take a break, you can take a break. So the days on this one were long, but it was really, it was more of a, we offered to get people, you know, dinner reservations at dinner places, stuff like that, if they wanted to go and they didn't want to find dinner on them by themselves. And so a really, really large number of people joined us for that. So dinners ran long. And so we got back to the hotel around 8 o'clock on some nights. So that was, yeah, that definitely made the day feel longer. We're going to be trying to phase some of that out for the 2015 tour. Because it's become apparent that, like, whenever we add stuff, people will want to do it, even if it's just a, hey, we're going to tell you where this restaurant is. So we're going to be kind of tinkering with that a little bit, moving things back to a more like half of the time in the evenings and half of it's on a free day sort of thing.
Right.
For future tours.
Yeah, that was really my only thing. It was like, man, these days, they're just so stuffed. And by the time you're on day five of a 5 days in a row of 12, 13 hours out, your body's, at least mine, I guess I'm just fucking old. Well, my body was like, that's enough. But, I mean, you know, at the same time, I mentioned, like, yeah, you know, we would come back from a 13-hour day, and some of those guys were like, hey, the arcade's open for another hour. Let's run off.
Yeah, it's – that's always – and I got to be honest, that is the biggest – thing that we struggle with the anime tours every single year.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, some people, and this is a common thing on a lot of tours. We had a tour that we did last summer where half the group, they had boundless energy. They wanted to go hiking all the time. And the other half of the group were, you know, they just, the heat of the summer really got to them, and they spent the last 3 days just kind of cooped up in the hotel because they were really tired. And getting that balance right is really difficult. And the best thing that we, you know, because evaluating people ahead of time and saying like, oh, what's your stamina level? That's not really fair. So we offer people the option to, you know, bow out of things if they need to. And sometimes it's I know it's tough for people because sometimes the, you know, a friend has a lot of energy and they feel peer pressured to do something. So it is honestly one of the big things that we struggle with a lot of tours, because some people, they do come to that, you know, when you travel like that, you spend your travel, you get over there and it's just like, I want the most bang for my buck. I want to go, go, go. And then there are people that want to take it more slow. And so we've always been proactive. We've worked with a couple cafes about, you know, trying to organize rest times and things like that. But most of those places, the big hang up is that most of those places need reservations for groups ahead of time. And there's not many places where, like, if 20 people just want to drop or stop there, you know, that I can place a reservation ahead of time. So that's why we have to be like, okay, there's a cafe here. We'll take you now. Then later on, we'll take other people. So, yeah, it's probably just, you know, making sure everyone's, you know, feeling good on that sort of, on that front is probably the hardest part of my job.
Wow.
Because especially I find for American tourists, you know, that Japan is a very, you know, everyone travels by foot and by public transit. And you're not, and if you're not used to that pace, if you're not used to that kind of, you know, that kind of pace, it can be a lot, really, really overwhelming, especially in the first couple of days. So,
well, yeah, I mean, the only piece of advice I would have there is, like, generally, there's always an escalator. So, you know, you can cut down on wear and tear on your legs by finding the escalator. Like, rare is the situation where you need to run up and down the stairs to catch the train.
Hamamatsucho North Exit, Track 27, Shinosaka Station.
All right. I'm just saying, generally, there's an escalator.
No, there's not.
There were lots of
places in the country where we go that they don't have escalators. That's why we warn people. You know, you're going to have to be prepared for stairs in certain situations. And in particular, the one by the hotel, the north entrance, where, you know, that street drops off. It's basically stairs.
Yeah, sure. But I'm just saying, other than a few instances, I was usually able to find one. Like, I get what you're saying. You know more about this than I do. I'm just saying I was usually able to find one. And I had a fucked up ankle the whole time, so I was really looking, like,
yeah, I know.
You know, I was looking out for that. I was really trying to avoid stairs. And generally, I was okay. Like, you know, or an elevator. There's usually an elevator. Like, they do have handicap accessibility laws there, so... You know, you can find a way to get up.
They have some,
but I get it. It's not exact, but I'm just saying. I it was your outline. Your warning seemed harsher than the reality. Like, I was more. I was surprised at how often I was able to find an escalator. Just okay,
point taken.
Let's not fight.
Point taken.
Anyway. But you're totally right. You are going to be going up and down a fuck ton of stairs, like, no matter what.
Yeah. It's just a walking base society for a lot of people. So, yeah, it's you know, something that we do warn people about. And we don't want to be – the thing that we tell people in our pre-departure emails and everything is we don't want to be disingenuous of people and make it sound like it's going to be a cakewalk.
Right, of course. Yeah.
Because so you want to – where it's stairs, where it's, you know – yeah.
Yeah. So you want to play up. You want to at least, you know, maybe overstate the difficulty a little bit just so people are over. Because much better to be more prepared and or over prepared for that than not. You know?
Yeah. It's also about, you know, comfortable footwear, things like that. We have people that ask if they can bring, you know, some girls have asked, oh, should I bring high heels? Like, nope. Sneakers all the way. Games will want to kill you after three.
We have some Twitter questions, but before we get to that, I did want to get Hope's sort of overall take on the tour experience. I know it was different for you. I know it was different for you because you were with me and we were working, but I did want to get sort of your overall take on the tour.
I really enjoyed it. Like, to me, like, because everything was new. It was sort of, I felt like I had more than enough time to explore the places where it was less guided, where it was just like, here, go be free for 3 hours or 4 hours inside this mall or whatever. I felt like there was always enough time there. I never felt rushed. So, I mean, even though they were busy days, they're busy days because you do like 10 things in a day, not because you're rushed through anything. It's hard to describe. But, like, I thought the amount of time that we were given to do everything was more than ample. Maybe it's just because I'm pretty good at zooming through things, but and still taking it in and enjoying it. But I was okay with the hearty pace of it because I work out a little bit, so I was like, okay, I can keep up with this. For the most part, I mean, about the only thing that I was not crazy about was the weather. But what can you do? There's really not anything you can do about. And it gets, like, really fuck nasty cold, which I
assholes to deliver those.
I knew that.
Deliver.
I knew that going in, like, going to Japan, I was like, it's gonna be colder than you want it to be. Because many places on planet Earth are colder than I want them to be. And it was like, oh, and then the 2 days when we are outside, it just happened to be the nastiest. And that was unfortunate, but, you know, I mean, you could find restaurants and cafes and whatever and duck into, and I was fine. So, yeah, I mean, like, I had a blast on the tour. I thought it was great. First trip to Japan was really, really satisfying, and, yeah, no, I mean, I had a blast.
Thank you. Much appreciated. So, yeah, it was a really good where it was a group. You know, I was really happy to see everyone get along. You know, whenever there's a group this big, I always, you know, get a little paranoid that everyone's going to get along, have a good time. But yeah, it was a really good tour. I was pretty beat when it was done because there were a lot of, we had a lot of some tours on the side on this one, but everyone, you know, got to where they needed to go and had a good time. And that's all we can ask for. So
excellent. Yep. Okay. Let's get to these Twitter questions.
Yes.
All right.
Let them roll.
BraxJS asks, over the years that you've traveled to Japan, how much of it changes from year to year? Last time I went was 2009.
Definitely certain places, the gentrification in certain neighborhoods. If we're talking Tokyo, I'd say Akihabara and Harajuku have seen a lot of changes. Harajuku, there's still a lot of that same culture that, you know, like, let's convert an apartment building into little artistic shops and put cool stuff there. That's still there, and I think that's still a cool, good, you know, vital that area. Some things don't change. I mean, whenever I go back up to Akita, we went there on a tour in February. It feels very familiar, like it's always kind of been that way. It's always looked that kind of way. So certain aspects of the of things change. I think most of the really big changes that you notice are in the city. Whenever there, you know, oh, here's a building, here's a new store, here's a new rail line here. But cool how even when those areas have a little bit of change, there's still sort of an air of familiarity when you see like that one shop that's still there or something like that. So
I didn't notice too much cosmetic change, especially in Tokyo. It was pretty much the same. You know, there were some cultural differences, a few, you know, like the Akiba changes we mentioned, but yeah, it's pretty much, you know, pretty much the same.
Yep.
There's still that, you know, that crummy little arcade that's upstairs in Nakano Broadway that's, you know, we were there on a Sunday, so it was full of dudes, like, shouting at arcade machines.
Hachi is still there, forever patient.
Yeah. All right, Rogue.
Still smells like smoke.
Rogue of Space asks, is food, merchandise, etc. more or less expensive in Japan than in the U.S.? From my experience, the thing, and I mentioned this to Hope, and it held up this time. Things are either expensive or dirt fucking cheap, but there's not a lot of in between. So for two people, yeah, dinner is going to cost you either $15 or $40. You know, the merchandise will either be $3 for something that's cute and funny, or $45. For something that, or dramatically more expensive than that, for something that, you know, you maybe a little nicer, but there's nothing like, there's not a lot of in between, like not a lot of dinner for two for $25 or $28, you know, like that doesn't really exist. But the extremes on either end, they're definitely there. That's my experience, though. What do you think?
I think it's not accurate. I think that there's definitely there's a huge gulf between the cheap stuff for people and there's the, you know, the expensive stuff, whether you're talking about character goods, cheap, you know, meals, experiences like onsen, even onsen, you know, there's the cheap onsen you do during the day, $10, fancy night where they view 14 meals, but it's like, you know, $400 a night, you know, plus other things. So it's kind of the cool thing is that once you do travel and you figure out where kind of the locals go and where the cheap stuff is, it's pretty easy to save money. You know, if you educate yourself about where those places are before you go, and that's if you're an independent traveler or if you travel with a tour, you can save some money. So
yeah, I, you know, just being candid, I was kind of shocked about how nice our budget actually wound up working out. For the two of us, we managed to get through the 10 days for the both of us there for 10 days, just expenses on the ground. This includes shopping, dining, and anything that wasn't included with the tour, so rail pass, etc. Mm-hmm. We managed to get through the whole thing for $1,000.
Yeah, which, and that's, you know, usually what I tell people the budget. I mean, from usually I have about $400 So,
right, yeah. So it's like $50.
And that's so good enough. You want to go out for like? Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, like, it's per person $50 a day. Generally, we'll do it.
Yeah, it's a good one. If you want to, like, if you want to, you know, break the bank and buy every single, you know, item, figure, character good from a certain series and not going to Broadway, then you should bring her, you know.
Yeah, right.
If you are if you're an indie traveler and nothing but, like, onigiri from, like, Lawson for the entire trip, you can probably bring a little less. But so, and yeah, there's lots of good resources. People that want to save money when they're traveling, the hostels in Japan are really excellent. You don't want to pay for a hotel. Hotels are pretty, so, you know, there's ways to do it cheaply. Everyone says it's very expensive, but yeah, if you research that, you can be done.
Right. All right. String and Sonata ask, what's the best way to transport home anything larger that you might buy in Japan, like figures?
Okay. Two ways. Well, first of all, when you fly to Japan, and I only mention this because some people don't realize it, on international flights, you still get one free checked bag, and you should totally use it. For getting home figures, usually they come in huge, giant, ornate boxes. If you're okay boxes, I call them, and taking them home, then in some space that a lot of our customers have used is that they take laundry, that, you know, some, or that, you know, it's wash stuff or stuff that they've, you know, worn once and it doesn't stink, but they don't want to wear it again. They stuff that stuff in the boxes around the figures or things that they buy, put those in your suitcase, and you can make it work. So the thing we tell everyone to do ones like Animated Spring is bring a huge bag with a smaller bag inside it. And that way, when you have bought a bunch of stuff, you've got that big bag and you can check that on the way home, and all your clothes and essentials, this can go in like a roller board, and that'll fit on a 747 or a big, you know, intercontinental jetliner, no problem. So as a carry on.
Yeah.
Far as shipping goes, there are shipping options. If it's not something super fragile, you can always ship it on a boat. It usually takes 5 to 6 weeks. There's an option called SAL. I think it's Surface Air Land. It's like ground shipping to the port in Japan, then a flight over to Los Angeles, and then ground shipping from there. It's expensive, but it's not as bad as like sending it like first class airmail home. So,
a few more. String and Sonata also asks, how much knowledge of written Japanese do you need to get around in Japan, both in and out of Tokyo?
This is a good one. I agree, though. No matter where you go, if you're traveling by rail, there is not a single rail station I have ever been to in Japan on any line that does not have the station on it in English. It's right. Always there.
Yeah.
Yeah, my listening comprehension is okay, but I can't read shit. Like, I know, it's like, that's no, that's I don't know the rest of it. And, like, everything's kind of tailored a little bit for, there's a lot of English-speaking people here. You know, here's English letters.
Mm-hmm. In Tokyo, that's definitely the case. Outside of Tokyo, one of the things I've noticed a lot is that even in country places, they'll have menus with pictures on them, and you can go along pointing at pictures and communicating that way. Another thing to keep in mind when you go to the country, a lot of those is that you're way off the beaten path, are just so thrilled to have tourists there from another country that they view. So, and that's something we've experienced on pretty much every tour we've ever taken outside of, you know, the Tokyo, Osaka metropolitan areas.
Right. All right. Okay. And lastly, from String and Sonata, what are some of the best festivals to attend, and when are they generally in the year?
The best fireworks are definitely in the summer. There's a big one. There's the Tokyo Bay fireworks, but that one is so big that if you are even remote, you should not go. The sea of humanity will swallow you. They always host it on the same weekend as Comic-Con. Sometimes, like most 9 times out of 10, those fireworks are on the same weekend as Comic-Con, and one of the best places to view them is from Odaiba. If you go to Odaiba that day, you are entering hell. There's no, it's like the alternative. The Edogawa fireworks, that's like one weekend earlier, that's just outside Tokyo. Really good fireworks display. There's also, if you're going to Tokyo, there's a festival that we do on a lot of tours in October called Oeshiki, that's at Honmonji Temple, which is in the side Kodan Airport. Wonderful 3-day festival. There's parades of lanterns. The neighborhood gets into it. There's festival booths selling all kinds of food. That's a really, really good festival. So we've taken tours of 30 people there, and people have usually remarked it was one of the best experiences of their trip. So, man, I could go on and on about festivals. The Yokote Kamakura Festival, which we did on our Fire and Ice tour this year, you get to hang out in igloos with locals as they grill mochi and let you drink sake. And it feels like you've been invited to into someone's house, and that's the point of the festival. And that's just a really cool experience. So, I mean, Japan puts so much heart and soul into their festivals. Really, if you're going to a local festival and you're at the, you're at the shrine or wherever it's being held, you really can't go wrong. They're really an important, cool cultural experience. And whenever we can put them on a tour, we always, always do.
Cool. All right. Ronan Willis asks, any advice for someone looking to visit Hokkaido?
Well, it depends on you. If you do not like snow, don't go until about May or June, because otherwise that's pretty much all there is. Lots of snow. But the snow festivals in February, the Lake Shikotsu Ice Festival, Sapporo Snow Festival, Asahikawa Snow Festival, they're all lovely. That's a good time to go. If you're skiing any time from late December to early April, is fantastic. If you want to get more into the sort of the nature hiking aspect of things, or just do shopping in the city of Sapporo, June is a good time. July is a good time too, because it can get as humid and rainy as the rest of the country does around that time of year. One last thing: if you go to Hokkaido, get like a bigger set of pants, because you will want to eat everything. The food up there is amazing. I cannot state this clearly enough. It's just like I had just potatoes and like hamburger skillets that were just, I cannot believe it was something that came from Japan. Just the food, everything's locally grown. They take a lot of pride in their agriculture up there. It's like, it's like everyone, the entire area on the entire island of Hokkaido, watched Moyashimon and was divinely inspired. So it's a great place to visit. Best advice for getting up there, though, take a plane to Tokyo. There is a Shinkansen coming that's going to go as far as Hakodate in 2015. But I'd recommend still taking the hopper flight, because otherwise that train trip up there is long. So, but if you want to see the country that way, that's a good one.
And if you've ever seen Silver Spoon, like half of that is just people putting food in their face. There's a 2-second pause and then,
Yes, everything. Yeah, and all that is true. I didn't believe it before I went to Hokkaido. I went, so true. Like, it's food paradise up there.
Okay. Scott Spaziani asks, what was the creepiest otaku thing you saw? Well, it came home with me, actually.
The creepiest. Oh wait, no, you meant the other thing. I thought you meant Pikachu for half a second. No, I don't.
We met with Good Smile, and they gave us some samples. Very nice folks, very kind, very eager to work with us at ANN, and they generously gave us some samples from their booth, and one of them was the Asuna from Sword Art Online in the little cage. It's a Nendoroid, and it comes with struggling and crying faces and special tied-up arms and also pleading arms. So you can put the pleading arms with the crying face, or the pleading arms with the struggling face, or the tied-up arms with the... Anyway, this is in my house now.
Chained up. Chained to the cage.
Yeah, anyway. Stacey Pro asks, what have been your favorite dishes or restaurants on your trips to Japan? Like, if we just give us like your favorite, your absolute favorite place to go to eat in Japan, Evan.
Oh man!
Like, if there's one thing you'll never miss when you go.
When I studied abroad, my host mom is the best cook in the world, so I'm super biased on that one.
Okay.
When I go up to when we take tours up to Akita, they have a local dish called kiritampo nabe, and it's freshly harvested rice grilled up on circle like fire, served in a nabe, a hot pot with chicken and vegetables. It's just makes you feel good and warm inside, and it's got the protein and all the, it's just a real awesome depth of flavor. It's one of those things that if I go within like a 100 kilometer radius of there, I have to go have it. It's just really, really good. Okonomiyaki is a close second, though. I love okonomiyaki. It's still my favorite food, but as far as restaurants go, that one, there's one Kiritampo place in Kakunodate up in Akita that's just some really amazing.
Right. Down the last few here, Rosario Robo asks, in order to take a good amount of sights, food, and culture, what's a good amount of time to visit Japan? 2 weeks, a month? I thought 10 days was, like, plenty. Like, just to get, especially if you go on the tour that we were on, you guys pack it so full that, I mean, you're seeing so much and doing so much. At the end of that tour, you're going to feel like you saw so much you don't even remember it all.
Mm-hmm. I usually say it really depends what kind of tour you want to have. Like a relaxed, like 2 weeks is good. Probably like having about 10 weeks, 10 days. Sorry, 10 days of about exploring, and then like 4 days where it's a, you know, maybe more slow exploring, a little low key. A day or two, like an onsen spring. That's really, really fantastic. So. Yeah, 2 weeks is a good time, but it all depends on each person. Everyone has kind of a different picture of what they want their Japan experience to be. And yeah, Chris, so, but 2 weeks is, I mean, for a good first trip, 2 weeks is a good place to start.
Yeah. Okay. And finally, Paul Freeland asks, what's the biggest misconception about Japan that you had dispelled by going there and seeing it in person?
Ooh. Oh, man, there's a bunch. I was thinking of internet. So, yeah, people think that technically agree that Japan's going to have free Wi-Fi everywhere. And there are signs that there's Wi-Fi hotspots, but most of them are slow and require like payment ahead of time. So that's a big misconception. The biggest misconception, and I this has become more of a problem lately, and I'm not trying to hate on blogs or people that write about Japan, but the biggest misconception is that, you know, these articles about, you know, LOL, Japan is so weird, Japan is weird this, Japan is weird that, I know those generate a lot of traffic, but, you know, the people that go to Japan and, like, they think that Japan is just going to be completely wacky and weird, you know, when a lot of those articles and things that people write on the internet are taken way out of context, I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions that I've seen in the last couple of years. People that, you know, are expecting to see panty vending machines on every corner, even though panty vending machines haven't existed for a very long time and have been illegal for a while. You know, the people expecting there to be like weird animal cafes on every corner, things that, I understand that Japan is, you know, there's definitely a part of the culture that they have a certain sense of humor and stuff like that, but going over there expecting it to be just like a wacky version, you know, in-person version of like the darkest corner, you know, Nichan or 4chan, is, it's really inaccurate. So I really think that it would, the thing that bugs me doing this job, and Zach, you can cut this part if I'm ranting too much, but okay. The thing that has bugged me the most in doing this job is that a lot of people that travel to Japan, there's a lot of, you know, there's so many books, things that are written online where it's just like, I went to Japan, I had this kind of experience, you'll have this kind of experience too. And I don't think it's really a good thing message for people to take in, because Japan is really, it's such a diverse, interesting place. There's, you know, interesting things to see in the city, the country, everywhere. I think it's best as an experience just for you to go and, you know, see a couple of the things that you are expecting to see. But otherwise, you know, go a little bit off the beaten path, try to take it all in and, you know, try a couple adventurous things that maybe you weren't on your must-do list. And, you know, what you take away from that. So...
Yeah, I think that's good advice. I think you're totally right, and I think those wacky Japan, like, not only is that super fucking tired, it would be like you know, going into a fast food restaurant here, taking a picture of the most egregiously indulgent thing, and saying all food is like this in America.
Yeah,
it's like, no, it's not. I don't think you're just focusing on the craziest stuff, and yeah.
I don't think people are trying to intentionally deceive, but that stuff gets so much traffic online that we get emails about it all the time to access. And there's stuff that is on little blogs that we haven't even heard of. And it's just like, wait a minute, this is a thing. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to keep up on some of that stuff. But yeah, I think that as a culture, you know, it's best to what we say to everyone before they come on our tours is, you know, leave as many preconceptions as you can behind, you know, treat it as it's a cool experience. You're going to see some of the stuff that you expect, and but maybe a couple of cool things that you weren't expecting, and a cool, you know, a couple of cool experiences that you weren't expecting to have, and that'll be what, you know, maybe draws you back either on another tour or as an independent traveler or as a study abroad student, or, you know, however you go back. So
okay, well, thanks a lot, Evan, for coming on and chatting with us. We both had a great time on the tour. And if people want to find out more, then go to packsettours.com. And yeah, make sure you check out those photo blogs, because they took us a fucking long time to put together.
Yes, please. Yeah.
All right. I know you're off on your next tour here pretty soon. But again, thanks a lot, Evan.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on. Next time we meet, I promise we will not argue about the location of escalators. We will just argue over how much I get to pet your cat before you kick me out of your apartment.
Yay!
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Evan for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.